Psalm 10, verse 1 begins with David praying, "Why do you stand far off, Yahweh? Why do you hide yourself in times of trouble?" That's how he starts off his prayer, feeling this apparent distance of God. And yet, by the end of the prayer, in verses 17 and 18, he's taking comfort in the fact that definitely God is coming near in judgment. I don't think that halfway through his prayer, sort of an answer flashed out, or there was a sort of a lightning flash and there was a manifestation of divine glory. I don't think so. I think that we have surely had this experience when you kneel down to pray and you pour out these feelings about God, why are you far off? And yet, through the process of prayer, during that prayer, you become very persuaded that things are in fact otherwise. That the God who is apparently distant is actually a God very near at hand and is not afar off at all. And I urge you to pray on your knees. I urge you to have this experience yourself, because this is one of many psalms where David begins with certain feelings, and yet by the end of the prayer, he is feeling otherwise. But I want to focus really on verse 4. The wicked think, "He will not require it, God will not require it." The RV says, "And all their thoughts are, there is no God." And yet this doesn't mean they were atheists. It means that they think that God is not going to judge their behavior. Verse 11, he says in his heart, in other words, this is the real implication of their positions. He says in his heart, "God has forgotten. He hides his face. He will never see it." So he begins by feeling that that's how it is. God is far away, doesn't appear to be watching. And then he realizes, actually, that's what the wicked effectively think, and I'm not going to think like them. So there's a parallel between the wicked saying, "You will not require an account." Verse 13, "Why does the wicked person condemn God and say in his heart, God won't call me into account?" There's a parallel between saying, "God's not going to ask me to account for this, God will not require it," and saying, "There is no God." Verse 4, as I say, "He will not require it. All their thoughts are, there is no God." By reasoning it out, I think you see that if the wicked say, "There's effectively no God because he's not going to require my behavior," the opposite is also true. If you really believe that God is, then you will accept that he surely is going to require your behavior and that of your enemies, those who are against you. So to believe in God, in a real sense, that God is absolutely real, this requires us also to believe that there will be a day of judgment, because God is a judge. If you believe in God, then you believe that he is a judge and that he is going to finally requite those who are hurting you and also hold you personally to account. And so to believe in the existence of God is far more than simply saying, "Yeah, well, I'm not an atheist." Belief in God in this sense is an implication that I know that I'm living under judgment, in the sense that all that I say, do, feel, and think will one day be judged. And yet, sadly, we are effectively atheists in our weak moments, because we act just like the wicked do, as if God is far off and he will forget. There is this sense that, well, yeah, I did that, but it was a long time ago. God is outside of time, as we understand time. So the idea that we have forgotten and therefore God has is not at all valid. This is why it's so critically important to confess sin immediately. Your conscience, beep, beep, goes off, beep, beep, that you've done something wrong, thought something wrong. Look, close your eyes and pray to God about it. If you're at work, go to the toilet, shut the door, and just ask God to forgive you. You're on a bus, you're sitting on a tram, pray to God straight away. Don't just think, yeah, well, one of those things. Oh, well, I hardly noticed it, so God hardly noticed it. In Psalm 50, David talks about these kind of people and says, you thought that God was altogether such an one as yourself. He isn't. And for us, I suppose, the passage of time works a kind of quasi-atonement. That, oh, yeah, I did that. But yeah, it's a long time ago, you know, I've moved on. Yeah, you did that a long time ago. But the passage of time has not changed anything in terms of your standing with God. And so because of that, we need, as I say, to repent immediately. That is so important because the passage of time plays tricks on human memory, self-perception, etc. Things get minimized, things get out of proportion, etc. You need to repent at the time and ask God's forgiveness immediately to have that conscience. That's why we're given a conscience. We need to follow it and not suppress it. And as I say, he begins by saying, oh, God, you're far off. It seems you're not noticing. And then he thinks, yeah, actually, that's what the wicked think. They think God's far off, and to think that is effectively atheism. They say there's no God. They say that, I'm not going to be called to account for this. There is a God, sure, but he's not going to call me into account for what I did to David, for my hard words to David, or whatever the context is here. And that's the point. He then thinks, ah, but I don't want to be like that. I don't want to be saying that God is so far off he doesn't notice. Sure, he isn't far off. And that's why he reasons himself in the course of this prayer to the position that, of course, God sees, hears, and knows absolutely all things, and is a God very near at hand, and not far off at all.